another world, another time, in the age of wonder.
You are listening to
Trial by Stone.
Trial by Stone!
Dea Tea, Dera Tea.
Your vital essence, the Dark Crystal.
Kida, Kida.
Come, see for yourself.
Aru, Garu.
How very interesting.
Dea Tea. I feel the song of Thra in my heart. Now go, you heroes of Thra.
Hello and welcome to Trial by Stone, the Dark Crystal podcast. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Sydney.
And today we have Becky on the show, Becky Henderson, who of course worked on the Dark Crystal Age of Resistance and puppeteered a lot of characters, but including probably one of our favorites, Deet, on the show. So Becky, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here. Thank you for reaching out and asking me. And yeah, I'm excited.
Well, we had such an amazing time chatting with you at the Great Conjunction.
Which I think was the first time that we met. And also, I mean, thank you actually for being part of our Dark Crystal quiz panel that Sydney and I did and that you partaked in.
Yes, that was a really fun quiz. And I wanted to know more than I did, if I'm honest.
You slaughtered everybody. You like showed up. I don't think you understood when you started out just how demolished everybody else was going to end up by the end of that. We were like, all right, Becky turned around, Dark Horse champion of the whole thing. It got very good. It was really good.
That's so funny how you remember things differently. I just remember the two things I didn't get. I was like, how did I not know that? And then that's what I've held of the experience. There you go. I'm glad that was it.
But your team absolutely slaughtered the writers. Like, it was not close by the end of it. The writers were highly embarrassed, made an absolute fool out of them. The puppet was mightier than the pen that day.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised about that too.
They have so much other stuff swimming around in their heads, I'm sure, because they're inventing lore as they write. So I guess a lot of it can get mixed up together. So maybe it was harder for them.
First and foremost, I need to know what sort of tea Becky is drinking right now.
I am drinking, it's a chai tea, and it's from a local small batch maker in Northern Ireland. It's called Chala Chai, and it's naturally sweetened with Northern Irish honey. So it doesn't have the kind of artificial sweetness that some chai has.
That makes me so happy. That sounds so delightful.
It really is. It's helping.
Yeah, and well, that's the thing. Like, how do you like your tea? Do you like it, you know, straight hot water, or do you have to have it, yeah, a bit of milk on top, or?
Great question. This is my dream chat that we just came on, and we're talking about tea. I like loose leaf teas, and my favorite type of tea is black tea. So, what would be the base of your breakfast tea? But I like flavored black tea. So maybe I have. One of my current favorites is like a black tea and like buttercup. It's like a buttery vanilla taste on top of your black tea. And with black tea, sometimes I would add milk, oat milk generally, to make it a little bit cozier. And there's a little bit of flavor that comes with oat milk. But if it's like a herbal tea or a floral tea or a fruit tea, I won't add milk.
And like yourself, I am also a milky tea goblin.
And for me, I'm peppermint. I like mine, yeah, straight, hot, yeah.
Sydney, what's your favorite tea?
Lately, I have been very much into, like, I don't know if they do boba where you are in Ireland, but it's very much taken off over here. Over here in the States, we've very much adopted a lot of Asian tea trends. And so we'll do, like, iced green tea, boba, or, like, matcha is really big. I drink matcha almost every single day. It's like my coffee. But right now I've been on a big like ube kick. And if you've ever tried ube, it's like a purple yam from the Philippines, and it's sweet and vanilla-y and delightful, and it's naturally the most beautiful shade of purple, and it tastes so, so good. So I'm on a big like ube milk tea right now, but every single morning I have to start off with matcha. So I'm really big on matcha.
I have never heard of ube before. We have boba over here. And I do love matcha, but I don't have that much caffeine. So I find matcha real heavy caffeine, and I can like feel my heartbeat after I have a matcha latte, but sometimes it's worth it.
Matcha has to be just like the littlest bit of tea and like a lot of milk. Now, if DEET were a cup of tea, what would she be?
Oh my goodness, that's such a good question. I feel like some sort of like baked apple flavoring, something quite homey and cozy, maybe a little bit of smokiness in it, like a slight base of like a Russian caravan with some sort of baked apple in it. I'm just inventing a tease now, but something, yeah, I think something really cozy and earthy, like from Grot.
And very autumnal, it sounds like a nice October by the fireside.
That's so great. I mean, we can just chat all day and all night about tea when it comes to, yeah. With yourself, Becky, I would love to know, like, how did you discover the Dark Crystal?
The Dark Crystal, my dad was very into Jim Henson and puppets, and me and my sister just always kind of only watched puppets or cartoon shows. And if our parents put like shows with humans on, we were like, why are you showing me this? And just weird. On board with watching humans on screen. I don't know, but I just remember that as like a fundamental thing of my childhood. I did not want to see a person on my TV screen. So we watched a lot of puppet shows, and I just remember, I don't remember who put it on, I just remember the Dark Crystal being on my TV one day, and the first thing I remember is like naked Jen playing the flute. And like my sister and I giggling, thinking this was so funny. And then I remember the Chamberlain getting his clothes ripped off, but I was obviously very young, and I thought they were like ripping his like guts out. So it was the very...
I used to think the same thing. Because of the way he's screaming, that vocal performance is so like guttural and like, surely they're killing him right now.
Agreed. Yeah, exact same thought. And then I think my favorite moment was Kira lifting the hood down, and that was like, whoa, puppetry.
Yeah.
So that was, I think it was my dad that kind of helped us discover it. He definitely was those roots into puppetry, and all just aided by the fact that I wasn't interested in humans.
Like I would say, it's such a cool moment, especially in the film with the introduction of Deet and just the mysteriousness, you know, of that moment. You know, like, you know, Jen doesn't know who it is, you know, who's tracking him down or whatnot. And then, the moment where she pops in.
It's funny you just did a little slip and called her Deet, because I was going to say that moment of Kira's reveal is so similar. It's actually hilarious that you did that, because like it's the parallel is so obvious and you can see that, and it's like you can't help but make those comparisons and make those slip ups now. And how great is it that there's so much Dark Crystal content now that we can get multiple Gelflings confused with each other, because we couldn't do that before. There were only two.
No.
And now we have not one but two and even more incredible female Gelfling just my heart still soars when I think about it. And Deet and Kira, you can tell, are just very much shaped from the same love. And so it's very natural. So it makes me really happy to see that, that the heart of Deet in front of us is clearly inspired by the same Gelfling that I always was growing up, which is Kira. My cat is named after Kira, by the way.
Oh, so sweet. Yeah, and Naya got to have a hood taking down moment, and I remember being so excited. I was like, we get to do the hood thing. Yeah,
that was such a great moment from the show. I think that was in episode 4, where we first get introduced to Naya and Kylan, who, of course, you know, for many of us who knew those characters, you know, from the young adult novels, actually seeing them, you know, from book to screen with Age of Resistance was such a great moment. Because, of course, you got a chance, puppeteer Naya as well. Was it something that you sort of, of course, when you're on the show, working on the show, and you saw that these books were based on, you know, these characters, did you actually get a chance to sort of like read some of the books at that time to sort of like get a bit of a, you know, mindset or headspace for like what Naya was?
Yes, I was really excited to get to be able to bring these characters that had been developed in the books into the series, and almost be a little bit Easter eggy in that way for fans that knew. I did read the books. I read the books, and then obviously only have what I have in the script of Naya to bring to the series. And I would say in the books, there's so much more coming of age with Naya. There's so much more questions and confusion, and she kind of doesn't have it all together, and she's
right.
more like prone to mistakes and messing up and things like that, or even just a little bit spicy. But so in the series, kind of not always having the room to be that character, I tried to bring out almost like purely the character that she would want to present to other people. So the stuff maybe that's outside of her and Kylan and their friendship, like just what she would present to strangers and to new friends. So it was definitely, I tried to stay in her kind of strength and stillness and that kind of more solid earth warrior vibes, instead of bringing all the other depth, which is so great and would have been lovely to explore. But I think for what it served in this series and their role coming in, I think it fitted to just have that side of her showing is what she was willing to show at that point. And they were so focused on the adventure and becoming the heroes of Thra that, she was on a mission. She was focused.
Yeah, which is awesome. And of course, you know, you are one of the lead puppeteers, you know, with Deet, which like must have been just such incredible sort of, you know, experience, like being one of the lead puppeteers behind a show like Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. How had you discovered about like with the show, like, you know, through the audition process and what that was like, and how you sort of got the role for Deet?
The audition process, I got emailed and asked to audition. They did a really big call out with most puppeteers in the UK, I think, auditioned for it. And I was an assistant puppeteer, so I wasn't really expecting anything, or I was thinking we'd go in and like be maybe helping each other in scenes, and I could show what I can do with arms. And then when I got there, I was in the waiting room, like handed a scene to read, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to do like a scene with like a character. Yeah, I was not that I was on the back foot by that. I was totally fine and excited and prepared to do that, but definitely was just like, right, this is going to be interesting. And I went up, and Dave Chapman and Warwick were in the room, and Kevin Clash. And then obviously I was like this new puppet person, yeah. Like, oh my goodness, Kevin Clash is in the room in my audition, and I won't be able to focus. And then we read, it was a scene between Brea and the Almadra after the tithing ceremony, and she's like mad at her and kind of given out. So it was that scene, and read that scene one time with this like foamy Muppet style puppet. And as soon as I finished the scene, Kevin Clash was like, she's hired. And I was like, but also part of me was like, don't make that joke.
Just right on the spot. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a dangerous joke to make. But no, I was like lit up inside. And I was like, if nothing happens after this, that just happened. And I never need to feel imposter syndrome again. So that was exciting. And then he was like, give her a real puppet. And there was this guy in the corner. He had these like mock Gelfling puppets. And he like came over to hand it to me. And I was like, I can't touch that. I was like, no, I can't. I like felt so unworthy to be taking this Gelfling puppet. It was so overwhelming. And then I tried that on and I did the scene again. And I think I did a different scene of another character. But then that was it. And then I went on my way home and I flew in to do the audition. I flew straight back. So I was on the way to the airport when I found out that I'd got a recall. For another day, so I was gonna have to fly home to just like fly right back, but that was fine. And I couldn't also believe that I'd gotten a recall and what was gonna be expected of me in that, because again I was still like thinking the most I would possibly get as a role would be to be an assistant. So I was like, how are they gonna judge my assisting? And went to the recall. It was a kind of terrifying process. I don't know why they did it the way that they did, but we were just all in the one room together watching each other's auditions, which, like, I don't know why they did that. I don't know. So it was very, very daunting. And I was like the new person. And just seeing all these really experienced people was like, I shouldn't be here. But in the way, it did help me in the way of like, once I was in that environment, I actually felt quite safe because I was like, well, they're so experienced. I don't actually have a shot at this. So I just get to have like the most fun I can have and capitalize on this really rare and unique opportunity. And that almost like gave me this kind of confidence and I felt quite relaxed and like, well, I just get to enjoy this now. This is amazing that I'm here. And I read for Deet. I read the scene where Deet meets Hup and absolutely loved it. I was like, this character is gorgeous. This writing is gorgeous. It was so musical. And I read for, and there was like a Modra Argot scene and I got to read for her and like be an old lady. And that was fun. And that's such a fun thing of puppetry of like, you can be everybody. You can, yeah. It doesn't have to be like, well, you only look like you could do this or that. Or like, I probably wouldn't have got to be Naya if it was down to how you looked. It's just so, such warrior strength. So yeah, I got to read for the Modra as well. And there were less girls than there were guys reading, which meant that to make sure all the guys got to read against Adit and whoever, meant that I just had to read the scene again and again and again and again, which then was really fun as well, because then you get to start playing and finding new things in it. And Deet was sold as this like other character, this like side character to the heroes and like the comic relief, and that Bray and Rianne were the heroes. So in my head as well, I was like, well, if there's a character that I could get that was small, like I could maybe get Deet. And yeah, I built a huge attachment to her in that audition. I just loved how she came off the page for me. And I think so much of that, of her beauty is in the writing. But I had one time on set where Will Matthews was coming over to visit. And he was like, oh, I write these lines and then you say them and they've just got so much more color. And I was like, I don't know. To me, it's just that's how it's written and that's how it comes off the page. anyway, I don't feel like I'm adding the thing. I can see it. It's there in what they've written. But yeah, I definitely saw all that indeed in that audition. And then it was a really long time until we found out. I want to say like months.
Yeah, a very long wait, yeah.
I'd resigned myself to the fact that I wasn't getting it anyway. So that was fine. But I had taken Dave Chapman, I feel like, no, who was someone like rang me at some point, or we got like a very generic group email that did kind of suggest like, your audition was great, you will be involved in some way, but I still didn't believe them. So I like took other work, I like booked other jobs. So I was really, yeah, I was very adamant that my experience had ended in that audition room, and I was totally happy with that. But then I was in Berlin playing a gig with my band, and we were just about to go on stage, and I got the email offering me the part of Diet, and it was the craziest thing. And again, at this point, I thought Diet was this like tiny character, and I was so excited and like freaking out with the band, and we were like, this is great, but we have to go do the thing. So like I played a very, very dazed set, and my head was absolutely elsewhere, but had so much fun, felt like a rock star. And then as soon as we finished, I went outside and called my mum and cried down the phone. Just so excited, so happy. It was unbelievable. And I'd found out that night as well that Victor was going to be Hup, because Victor had trained me in puppetry, but we hadn't like seen each other in like 5 years or worked together or anything like that. So it was like, whoa, this has just come together. It was very exciting. And it wasn't until I got the scripts through and I started reading the scripts, and it was in like one of those first scenes with Diet in the sanctuary tree. I says something of basically that's like, you are needed to save Thran. I was like, that's weird. That feels kind of significant. and just as I kept turning the pages, it was like, then Diet's part is just like growing and growing and growing. And of course, by the end, it's like, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. She's kind of important.
It's so interesting, yeah, how very, probably in the early days that, like, yeah, that Diet was sort of more of a comic relief, or not comic, but, you know, the humor side with her, with Diet. And interesting, I guess, how that got transferred probably a bit to Hup, essentially. And for me, I always loved the first, half of the show, like with Diet and Hup, and just the adventures that they get into. They're just full of joy for me every time I see them two together.
Yeah, there's definitely a lightness and a sweetness and just a curiosity that we get to experience with them, and we kind of get to discover Thra a little bit through them and through Diet's eyes of experiencing a new place. So I do get that, you know, like Rhian from the start is just like heartbreaking, serious storyline. So I totally get that they were like, oh, this is like relief from that action.
I think too, it's very clear the kind of organic friendship and camaraderie between you and Victor. I think having seen you both interact in real life and hearing a bit of the backstory of how he had sort of trained you and like going through so much of the audition process together and everything, going back and rewatching the series and watching the scenes between Diet and Hup, it makes so much sense why the two characters just mesh so beautifully together. And I don't think it would have come across in quite the same way had you and Victor not had that sort of a relationship already. And it genuinely makes a humongous difference.
Yeah. It was one of those things that felt like quite stars aligning at the time, especially because I was coming in and being quite, you know, this is going to be my first like actual character performed of my own. And all the wealth of kind of nerves and imposter syndrome and everything that comes with that. So to then kind of find out that all of my first scenes that we were shooting, because those kind of Deaton Hut was mostly what we shot first. So all of that kind of finding my feet time would be like with the person that trained me in puppetry. Like, what are the odds of that? As like just this safety net and this comfort, and it was great. And to already have that shorthand as well, and to know each other so well. There was even like moments, there was a moment where Victor was assisting me, and it was Deet and Rianne at the fire. And again, like, I'm so new to this, and everyone is new to Gelfling and how Gelfling move. No one really knew that. So I guess we're all a little bit on that page. Louis was like, okay, so make her come in and kneel by the fire. And I just looked at Victor. And I didn't say anything. I just looked at him. And he just looked at me and he went, as in like to get the weight of the hips of like kneel. And like just in that moment I was like, okay. And then went forward and did it and got to have this totally wordless conversation from like freak out to lesson to shooting and having someone there like that was so helpful. It was, yeah, that was a little magic thread that came together.
It does make me like realize that with the Gelflings, you know, before Age of Resistance, there was only two puppeteers that puppeteer Gelfling. That was a thing, I guess, going into, you know, when with puppeteering a Gelfling. Of course, you probably would have, you know, watched the show a lot to try and, you know, figure out how, you know, how they did it in the film, or, you know, all the behind the scenes or watching the film. Well, was it pretty challenging to sort of like try and figure out like, you know, the right movements to bring a character like Deet to life, like, you know, when it comes to movement or even, yeah, all that kind of stuff?
Yes, hugely so, because in the original film, all we really get from the Gelfling are these really still moments, these gorgeous, like, just slow-moving art pieces, and everything they do is so calculated. And then if they're, like, running, it's a body performer, like, in the distance. So when we only had that as a ground to work from, but then we were making this crazy action series where all their movements were huge and active, and they're fighting and flying and doing so much more. So finding the through line from what we knew in the original film to what we needed to make them capable of now, but still look Gelflingy, was a really big challenge. And I definitely find it difficult. Finding the walk was right, because we're so used to puppet walks being very different and very bouncy. And so finding that the more humanoid style in them, we spent a lot of time. I feel like our whole rehearsal, we had a week of rehearsal. I feel like the whole time we just spent it trying to walk. And I remember, I think the hardest, or maybe just more of a revelationary moment for me in terms of feeling the pressure of having to perform a Gelfling and figure all of this stuff out, was this scene where Deet and Hup are in the like bar brawl fight. And originally scripted wise, Deet at the start of the fight was like thrown to the floor and never engaged in it. And I said to Louis, I was like, I don't want Deet to be like a damsel. She's not a damsel. She needs to do something. And then he was totally on board, and he was just like, oh, she can stamp on his foot. And then I was like, stamp on his foot. the part of me is like, why did I pitch for this? Because I don't know how to stamp on someone's foot. I don't know how to make a Gelfling stamp on another Gelfling's foot. And we were just like, it was right before we were rolling on it. So I also didn't have the time to figure it out. And I was kind of freaking out because it's a lot of pressure. And I looked to Warwick. Warwick was beside me. He was being one of the kind of Gelfling in the bar. And I was like, Warwick, how do I make it look like she stamped on his foot? And he just laughed at me. He just laughed. And he was like, I don't know. Nobody knows.
You'll figure it out. And also, like, another thing is, like, I guess, you know, with the challenges of puppeting, but, like, not only, you know, with getting the movement, but also, I guess, you know, the camera is always moving, whereas, you know, in puppetry, it's usually just, you know, the shots are very still, and therefore, you know, you sort of have a really good grasp of you know, with where you need to be. But with the camera moving, that must have been just another layer of just sort of the challenges of, you know, making sure, you know, you know that you're not accidentally getting framed or, you know, in all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was such a new lesson of, like, normally you can walk into frame and you can lock into place and you know you're safe, you know where all your limits are, and you can play out the scene that way. But we had to do this, like, constant correcting. You were performing it, but you were constantly correcting your puppet to every single little change in the camera angle, because it just makes a monstrous difference. And even that was so, like, no one's done this before. Like, what Warwick was saying was, nobody knows. No one's done this before. So we have no one to call upon other than ourselves to figure out. The moving camera was such a challenge and took so much brain space. Puppeteers don't always have to learn their lines, because it is still, and we look at monitors, so a lot of people tape them to the monitor and you can kind of glance over and check it and read. You obviously know them to a point, but you don't have to be, like, totally off book. Whereas I learned everything to be totally off book, because I was like, I can't let my eyes leave this monitor for a second. Like, I just have to be fixing all the time. It's like kind of doing a smoke and mirrors magic trick, and they take away the smoke and the mirrors. And they're like, do the trick, do it the same.
Yeah, and everybody can see all of it. It's all right there in the front. And everyone in the theater is doing it for the first time together. I'm sure that created a fair amount of solidarity, and honestly, probably a level of comfort too, in a way, to know that it wasn't by any means just you figuring things out on your own. As you mentioned, like, there were so many things you were doing that, like, Warwick or any of the other puppeteers might be like, oh, I don't know, I haven't done that either. And you sort of figure it out together. I imagine that's probably very different from a lot of other environments as a performer in film, where everyone's sort of figuring something out for the first time as a team, if that makes sense, as opposed to, you know, you not necessarily having something to fall back on, as you mentioned before.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it took me a while to realize that, because I was kind of so in my own head of feeling like I was the inexperienced person. But then moments like that with Warwick, it was like, oh wow, this is just how this works. We all just have to kind of get it wrong to get it right, and be so okay with messing it up to find that. And exactly what you're talking about, no one knowing, meaning that we can kind of meet on the same level, that was across the board of every department. So the whole production was, everyone came in this, like, gorgeous place of just, like, wanting to work together to make this thing happen. And no one had kind of better than thou outlook on anything. No department was coming in going, no, we know best, we know exactly how to do this. Everyone was like, how can we make this happen? Every department came in very level-headed, and it meant we got to work together. And it was such a unique set to be on because of that. Everyone was so mucking in with each other, and such great conversations were happening. Yeah, the effort to work together to find what we needed to find was really special and really unique. I think it was a very magical set to be a part of.
Would you say there was a turning point in the filming process, like during production, where you felt like you got in the groove of, okay, now I'm just excited to show up and see what we all come up with, and like you've shaken off that initial feeling of chaos, and now you're like, I've embraced the chaos and we're all in the chaos, and now I can't wait to see what kind of chaos is happening next, and you're just like fully in it? Or was it just panicked chaos the whole entire time until the end?
No, I find I eventually find my groove. I think I eventually stopped that imposter syndrome and why am I here. I eventually got rid of that and started enjoying it. I think I realized, because not a single other person on that production, no other performer, crew, writer, producer ever made me feel that way. That was all just me and my own thing. So no one else is doing that. So eventually I was able to check in with myself and be like, oh, this is just us that's putting this pressure on. No one else is seeing it. So was able to shake that off, but probably took like 6 months to do that, because it was so scary. And again, you kind of maybe just about figure something out on one set, and then you move on to a whole new set. It's a whole new wealth of problems and new kind of magic tricks to figure out again. And it was every time you got used to your challenge, it was like next challenge. But that is one of the things that I love about puppetry, is every workday is just problem solving and figuring out, how can we make it pick up a book? How can we make it peel a banana? Like, whatever it is, figuring out puppets is so fun and satisfying. And definitely the latter half of the series, just was able to let go and enjoy things, especially by the time like the battle started happening and we were filming that. I mean, that took ages to film, but those moments, I really just remember being so at ease during that time, like with all the puppeteering, and because there were so many Gelflingen, you were like in deep 1 minute and then the camera flips, then you're over in Naya here, and then you're over in Modrasithi, and then you're kind of just running around being all these different Gelfling. It really became fun chaos. It became a chaos, I guess, that we understood. So we were able to lean into it more.
You know, sort of looking back at the show, I mean, like you mentioned, how it was sort of good that, you know, I guess, you know, that you started off with just scenes with yourself and Victor, you know, with Harp, and sort of, you know, sort of built upon till you got to the fight scenes and all that kind of stuff, which is just great to hear, just those experiences. But I'd love to know, like, through the show, like, is there a particular, like, scene or moment within Age of Resistance, like, as Deet, that you're like, you know, I'm really proud of, like, that particular moment, whether it's, like, the way you puppeteered or you just knocked it out of the park, or this was really challenging but you got there in the end?
The first time I had that or felt that, I'd had all my walking through the forest bits of Deet and Hop, and I was so nervous in those times. But then after those, we filmed, it's a little bit out of sequence, but we filmed this scene where she's in the cot in the Caves of Grot, and she wakes up in her bed and she just tells about everything she saw. And that was like the most hectic morning that I had had. My train never came, and I was late to work, and then just thrown into this tiny hole in the set that was like really squished. But I think almost having that, so it was just like my face and my monitor, and there was like stuff even up against my face, like while puppeteering. And almost that just, it brought everything in. It closed off the world outside. And because it was such a still scene of getting to just be locked into that cot bed and just performing from there, and it kind of got all this stillness that I wanted to have and I just got to play into the scene almost like an actor would. It took away a lot of the difficulties of moving around and figuring out how we're up, the choreography underneath of all the puppeteers crossing each other and moving over. It kind of got rid of all of that, and I just got to be in situ and play that scene out. And I remember after filming that scene, feeling really happy with it. It was the first time that I'd felt so happy and confident with something. And Lisa Henson sent me an email after to say that that scene was really gorgeous after she'd watched the rushes of that day. So that was really nice. I also loved just dispelling the darkening on all the Skeksis was a fun, epic moment. When do you get to do that in life? So that was one where I just got to enjoy. I think because I was screaming at the same time, it lets out all any extra other energy and just channeled it. So I felt
heavy metal.
Yeah.
Dita is very heavy metal in a lot of ways. She's, it's always the quiet girls. You never know.
I think in particular with Dita on the show, I read about like with Deet's eyes, and that I think that they had to be, well, it was more to do with the blinking that had to be sort of added digitally. And I think was it the challenges with puppeteering, like, trying with the eye blinking at the time, or was it someone that was operating the eyes that just wasn't working out? Or I was just curious about that.
So they discovered quite quickly with the sculpt of her head, with how big her eyeballs were, meaning how much space you'd need for eyelids that were able to come over and close and then also be up back inside her head and have her looking lovely. So they figured out that they weren't able to have blink, so they were always going to digitally blink her. She did have other animatronics than her eyeballs. She had eyeball tracking, but again, because her eyes were so big, the second that she would look too much to the one side and you'd see white, it looked like she was like looking all the way back around. So it was very, you had to be so delicate with her IMEX, which were on RC for other puppeteers to perform. It was mostly Don Austin, who is the ghost of Christmas Present, did her eyes a lot. but what happened then, so you kind of have to relinquish control and trust the animators of the blinks to kind of feel your performance out. There's an element of that that's quite nerve-wracking. And then I remember Louis Leterrier telling me that she was going to blink, like, sideways.
Oh, okay.
Like, teasing me or something, or if that was real. but I was like, oh, okay. I remember he told me that a couple of times. She was going to blink sideways.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, so you have to kind of relinquish control in that way. But I think a huge part of puppetry is that, and you get the best puppetry when it's team effort, because there's only so much you can achieve as a person. So if you can find people that merge with you and get this performance out of one creature, and maybe there's four people on it, I think that's where the real magic lies. So there was part of relinquishing control, but then part of then that allowing it to be even better.
Like, I know from, like, I guess it must have been sort of a bit of a relief as well, because it's like, it was at least one less thing to sort of worry about. You know, you can worry about so many other things with puppeteering, you know, with Deet, and, you know, that's just one less thing to sort of worry about. And like you said, you know, let the animators sort of, you know, work it out, and hopefully it turns out great, which it certainly did. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There was that initially, and then quite quickly was like, great, well, I just get to, that's out of my hands now. I don't get to control that. Someone else can do it. And Dineg did a fantastic job. They're just brilliant with it, and definitely like fed in and felt exactly what I was doing. It was like they were breathing with her. They did a fantastic job. And I think that's such a, because I get asked a lot about like practical versus CGI. And I mean, I obviously love practical effects. I think there's just something so much more tangible when we know what's real. Our eyes just know what's real. And if there's like a gremlin attacking someone, it's so much more of a thing when I know, like, no, that's actually on them. Or someone's like stroking a Mogwai or holding Baby Yoda, and it's like, that's, it's so tangible, it's real, whereas we just know when it's CGI, so it doesn't have the same chemical response in us. But I think there's this beautiful marriage to be had with augmentation of practical effects, and that we shouldn't be up against each other, that we should be getting married.
Exactly. Now kiss.
Yeah. 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 That was a thing with it. Yeah. That was a thing with Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance, is how well it sort of blended between, you know, the majority of like practical effects, you know, with puppetry and the creatures and all that kind of stuff. But still, you know, had the, and you know, the CGI to sort of help benefit some aspects now and then. So I think that really, really helped, you know, really, you know, brought the show to life in many ways. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in many ways as well, as you said, Becky, a lot of the time you can tell the difference as a viewer. You can see when something's tangible and when something's digital, but when they've married properly, that seam in the middle starts to blur a little bit, because I don't think that when I first viewed Age of Resistance, it didn't occur to me that the blinking of Dietz's eyes might have been digital. It, in fact, I wondered, like, how is that puppet doing that? Those eyes are huge. And it didn't cross my mind that she's blinking digitally. And that's how you know that that marriage is working out, that you've made your Barbies kiss properly, because when you start to not be able to see that difference. So did you feel, I'm interested for somebody who does know everything, because you were there and you were part of that process, when you eventually saw the final product in many of those scenes, did you find that fourth wall was able to blur for you? Were you able to sort of disappear as an audience member sometimes and then forget, wait, how did we do that? Or does it always look like, are you always seeing it as a puppeteer when you're watching it back?
I am seeing it as a puppeteer. There is such familiarity with what, because we're watching the monitors every time we're performing. I'm seeing every little bit of Deet or whoever. But I think with that then comes the appreciation for maybe Rianne's looking at her, and then maybe there's just this little lip curl that wasn't there before, and they've just fed into the energy that he was giving, and they're able to augment it that little bit more and lift it. And like Deet's eyes, I thought were brilliant, and they only animated them within the realms of the capability of animatronics. They didn't then go, oh great, we get to animate the blinks, we'll make them as human or as gelfling as possible. They made them as animatronic as possible, and with certain Skeksis hand movements, you know, the original Skeksis hands were like mech keys, and they could only move in certain ways, so they only animate, you know, the Skeksis aren't suddenly, like the Skeksis hands move in a very specific way. And the same, they showed me a mock-up of how they were like animating the Landstriders, and they animate, because it was originally humans with like stilts on inside these suits, and they animate it as if that is what's happening. So that capabilities of Landstriders running are only completely locked within that ability. And I think that's what's grounded the marriage so well, and why our eyes can't see it all the time and can't spot it all the time. If it's a scene that maybe I wasn't in as heavily, I don't think I'd be able to point it out in the same way when certain things are augmented. I think Adina just did such a fantastic job.
Yeah, they really, really did. And it's such a joy to watch back. I, you know, the more times that I've rewatched it, and I'm sure Phil, you'll agree, you spot something new every time. But I think what's great about Age of Resistance, I mean, to add to the long list, the original Dark Crystal film is very much the same way in that respect. You can watch it, you know, 1,000 times, and boy, have we, and always like notice something different every single time. And I think that it's amazing that Age of Resistance has recaptured that same quality of always finding something different. And would you say that a huge part of why that is has to do with the fact that there were so many different, I almost said hands in it, but, you know, literally and figuratively, because there are so many minds and hearts and creative processes all sort of chaotically merging at the same time. Would you say that that is a part of the creative process that is necessary to a final result like that?
I will say, in terms of finding something new every time within shots, even there'll be maybe two characters in the foreground, that's maybe four people puppeteering, but completely riddled in the back of the woods and the whole deep, deep background is other puppeteers hidden under rocks and behind trees, and even just like pulling a bit of grass to make it wiggle. And, oh, the grass is alive and these rocks are rolling around and keeping things alive. I think part of the skill of that world building, of shows like that, that you can come to and just watch again and again and again, and you learn something new every time. I think there's the skill in that is not giving you anything at the start. You just enter the world and the world is going on and no one explains anything to you, which is what the first film just had down of, like, everything Ogra says is like, what do you mean? Oh, and it's just alludes to so much more. So every time you watch it, you're finding the lore yourself. So you just have to keep immersing yourself in it. I think the best world building is when they kind of give you nothing and that you're just thrust into the world.
A bit like playing an RPG in a way.
There's always something new to see, you know, to experience it all over again from Dark Crystal and even from Age of Resistance. So, I'm actually looking forward to, you know, revisiting the show again, you know, especially with this year, you know, as we're sort of heading towards the 5-year anniversary of the Dark Crystal Age of Resistance. So, which is pretty surreal. It's like, oh, wow, you know, it's almost been 5 years since the release of the show. But of course, I mean, it's longer for yourself, Becky, because, you know, you probably counted by when you worked on the show, it's, you know, 6 years ago that it sort of all happened. And it must have been sort of like, because I think it was like around the same time that you also co-starred in Dairy Girls as well, right? So you sort of had Dark Crystal and Dairy Girls sort of happening around the same time.
Yeah, I had filmed Dairy Girls just before I filmed Dark Crystal. So while we were still shooting Dark Crystal, it came out and was on TV. And then as soon as I finished it, I went into the second. Yeah, so it was kind of bookmarked by Dairy Girls for me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it just all scheduled in perfectly. So, no, which is fantastic. Yeah, yeah.
Which Gelfling clan do you think Aisling would be a part of?
Ooh, that's such a fun question. She might be a Vaprin.
Yeah.
I think she'd be a Vaprin.
Little snooty.
In the library. Yeah. Little snooty. Bare access to education. Yeah.
Probably some musical training as well. A little bit of a, like, classically trained in music.
Well, and also, I mean, it was great to see you at the great conjunction. I think as we talked earlier about with the panel quiz that you're a part of. But actually, one of our favorite moments, of course, was from Saturday night, where you and Victor did the song. It's the Age of Resistance as we know it, and you know it. So that was such a great moment. How did they? I think I might have talked to Victor about it. I think I had an episode where he talked about how the song came about. But what was it like for yourself being involved? Like, you know, we're singing along, with Victor for that.
Yeah, I mean that was Victor's genius. It was totally his idea to do that and put that together, and. I was like, yeah, absolutely, I'll do it. But definitely thought originally when I was like, oh, and we'll just are we party back at the Henson lot? I definitely thought it was just going to be like us. So some sort of like work new karaoke night performance. And then like everyone was there. I was like, oh, this is not what I thought this was going to be. So I definitely had to like pull courage from somewhere and just do it. But then once I was up, I had so much fun. But yeah, arriving, it was like, everyone is here. It's not what I thought.
Yeah.
It was the perfect amount of levity to counterbalance the fact that, you know, getting the rereading of the master dying scene happening in the same night basically took all of our souls out, and we were all crying and our hearts on the floor. So it was a very nice sort of to have both of those happening. Yeah, no, it was very good for the soul.
Follow it with mayhem. Yeah.
I like to follow all of my emotions with mayhem. I think it's very it keeps me humble. I have another question, actually. I was wondering if during the process of working on Age of Resistance, how early on or the entire time did you have an idea that you were not going to be providing the voice for Dee? Did you know that going in ahead of time that it was always going to be someone else's voice later on? Or did you ever have it in the back of your head that, like, just in case they use my voice for any of this, here's what I have?
Yeah, so when we were offered the roles, we were all told that it will be dubbed by someone else. So I just went doing my version of what Deep was, to the read throughs and things like that. And then we started filming, and I asked them a few times. I was like, but who are you going to get to do it? So that, like, are they going to be English? Are they so that I can match their accent? Because, like, Deet kind of had this quite soft Northern Irish. I softened it, but it was Northern Irish in, like, a fantasy world, Northern Irish. But it's like, so if she's going to be voiced over by, like, an American or something, that's going to be a problem, like, lip sync wise. So I asked them a few times, and then one time I asked them, Lisa was like, no, I think we'll keep it. So I had I had thought for a bit, then I was like, oh, maybe they will just do this. I'm not sure, whatever, I'll just keep doing my thing. And then well after we had wrapped on stage, then Natalie got cast. So then poor Natalie had to, like, fit her accent into this, like, really fast, like, Northern Irish. It's so much easier to talk fast in my accent than in an English accent. So then she was having to, yeah, she had her work cut out for her. And I tried to help, but they wouldn't let me.
Yeah, that's fascinating that they would have, or that she would sort of mold her performance sort of around, you know, because from an outsider's perspective, you could think that, like, okay, they just base it on what it looked like physically and try to match that. But it's really nice to know that your vocal performance that you did put in as you were acting does ultimately end up informing the performance that the voice actor does bring, and that that fusion pattern continues on where everybody's bringing in their creative processes together. So there, in that way, there is a little bit of your voice still present in what we end up hearing. So that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I can still hear everyone's voice when I watch the show, because just what you lay down, there's not a lot of freedom in the actor that comes in next to do it, because mostly because of the breathing, because you have to match someone's breath to that performance that they gave. You're kind of forced and locked into that, which maybe could be, like, if you're the actor coming in, maybe there's times where you're like, I would have loved to perform the line this way, but I kind of just have to do it this way now. But I think I got quite lucky, and I know Hannah, who voiced Naya, we met at the premiere of it, and she was really, like, positive and really, like, I loved what you did, and I knew exactly then what to do on top of it. So yeah, I think I got lucky with both Natalie and Hannah that they were, like, in on my performance and weren't against the performance. So it's fun, and again, yeah, it's just that more cogs to the machine making this thing come together.
And I think, I mean, I guess it was at least great that you got to voice, you know, like some other characters like in the show. I think you did Bobbin, and I think Mordra. Was it Ethri or?
I puppeteered Mordra Sethi. I voiced Mordra Ethri.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
When you go in there to think that your journey started, thinking I'm just going to be an assistant and I don't really belong here, thoughts of that nature, which, first of all, very comforting to hear that other people who are incredibly talented and successful have those sorts of thoughts too. Excellent. But to think that your journey starts out that way and then you end up just absolutely everywhere in Age of Resistance, like the fact that, you know, not only did Deet turn out to be this incredibly important part of Thra and the entire Dark Crystal continuity, but that you also get to be just sort of all over the place. Like, could you have imagined that was, you know, that you were going to be such a gigantic part of the entire Age of Resistance? I don't think your expectations, it doesn't sound like your expectations were quite there.
No, not in a million years did I think it would be so immersed. I thought I'd get a couple of days getting to do some assisting, and I was so happy with that as my reality. That would have been amazing. So, and then it just turned out to be so much more to get a character as wonderful as Deet, who I connect with so well, to get a cool character like Naya, to get all these other little characters that I played, like Mudra Sethi or the Vaprin wife at the tithing and different things. And then I also assisted all the time in all these other characters. I assisted Brea a lot. I assisted in every single Skeksi at some point. So I was also just in the core kind of 12 of us were just in everything all the time. Even if you're not in a Skeksi, you're in some, like, maybe in the scientist lair where there's just little creatures everywhere, then you're just a little creature in a cage. You're everywhere. And then afterwards, that Henson wanting to make sure that all of our voices were throughout the series in different ways was really special. So yeah, getting to go in and do that. And it was funny because obviously we're the puppeteers here, we're providing the voices normally to be overdubbed in this situation. So then getting to Mordra Ethri was puppeteered by Louise Gold. So then kind of getting to partner up with like Louise on a character in that way was so fun. It was like, oh, we're this character now together. It was really nice.
No, that must have just been just incredible experience. And you know, the show, you know, it's interesting how it's been, you know, almost 5 years later and there's still been no other show like the Dark Crystal Age of Resistance. And so no, I think you really knocked it out of the park, you know, with Deet especially. Such a fan favorite. And we hope to see more of these characters in the future, whatever may be, you know, if it does or doesn't, you know, we always got to hold on to that hope that, you know, we get that get this story sort of concluded for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The little sections where, what would you call it, with like premonitions, almost these little suggestions that we got are killing me. I need to know why. Why was he on the Skeksi throne? What happened? I'm someone who can I call?
That you're right there with us on the edge of our seats, hoping to see what happens next. And that, you know, it's very comforting. And with everyone that we've interviewed, whether they were more involved with Age of Resistance or the film, seems like just so invested in this sort of family that we're all a part of by loving this franchise, whether they took part in it or they just love it from afar like we do in many ways. So we're all, there's this sense of unity, and it's all very like, it ties in very well with the themes of the Dark Crystal franchise. That's that sense of unity, that whatever happens next, you better believe every single one of us is going to be like right there, ready to be part of it in some capacity. And that's so exciting.
I think that's the beauty of the conventions as well, kind of getting everyone under one roof that are all so into this really specific art form and this really specific niche and kind of cult classic thing. I would suggest to anyone, if you have a really hardcore interest, to find the convention version of that thing and to go and meet your people. But yeah, I think the Dark Crystal family is a very special one.
Always will be. So I think we'll wrap up for this episode of Trial by Stone. Again, Becky, I want to say thank you so much for being on the show. Pleasure having you on. And for the listeners out there, how can people find you, like, on social medias? And you're mainly on Instagram, or
I'm mainly on Instagram. I have a YouTube as well, but Instagram's currently my main social media. I don't really post on anything else, so those are the two places to find me.
Cool, excellent. And we'll definitely put those links in the show notes. And actually, I will say, your YouTube channel, I've really been enjoying all the videos that you've been doing for that channel. I think one of my favorites, of course, was when you did a second a day video with Age of Resistance, and just that neat little sneak peek of, like, just what went on throughout that time when you were shooting, you know, you were puppeteering, you know, on the show. So that was such a great little moment.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, I think it helped capture the chaos as well.
Mm.
It's just so fast.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also a big fan of the new song as well. so good. Excellent. I mean, I'm a little biased. If you were to see the house that I'm in right now, anything that has to do with ghosts, I'm all about. So,
nice.
But your music is very much to my sensibilities. So, definitely for those listening, if you are not aware that Becky is quite quite a gifted musician and her band is quite awesome, definitely give them a check. As well, and anything else you'd like to get people hyped about that you might have to keep an eye and ear out for coming up pretty soon here while we have you?
I have stuff coming up, but I don't know when it's coming out. I'm in a cool, like, indie thriller film called One of Us that has a fantastic cast. It's got Sienna Guillory, Douglas Henshaw, Kit Connor, Callum Woodhouse. I could keep going with the cast list of that film. It's really good. So I'll post about that once there's any movement on that front. And I have another kind of kids puppet thing, but again, there's no announcement for that. So you'll just have to follow me.
All under NDAs and whatnot. So
keep an eye out then. That's very exciting. Very mysterious and very exciting.
Yeah. So, again, Becky, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so nice. Thank you.
If you'd like to get in contact with the show, you can do so at darkcrystalpodcast@gmail.com. You can also like us on Facebook, follow on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe on YouTube. If you'd like to know more about the podcast, visit our website at www.darkcrystalpodcast.com. Thank you so much, and stay tuned for the next episode of Trial by Stone.